All right, I see what you're doing, Star Trek Discovery. You're playing with our emotions. You're really messing around with us, and I'm not going to stand for it. All right, I'll stand for it, but it was a little bit of a roller coaster this week. We're going to talk about all that, and you want to know what an obel for Sharon is?
All right, I see what
you are going to have to stay tuned, because Star Trek Discovery starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Just imagine that we're coming into the sounds of Space Oddity by David Bowie, as featured in the episode. We don't get to play fun music anymore, but that's what we would be playing right now if we could. Welcome to the Star Trek Discovery After Show. I'm Christian Black, joined, as always, Flobo.
How's it going, everybody? Flobo Boy's in the building.
And Frank Moran.
Hey, everybody.
With a very fun Spider-Verse t-shirt. Oh, you probably can't see it at home, but I can see it and I can enjoy it.
That's all I only dress for you.
There's a lot. I mean,
hey now.
Finally.
Sorry,
yeah,
Flobo.
Sorry, yeah. Sorry. We've known each other longer. Yeah. You weren't around for season one, right? So maybe season three he'll start dressing for you.
Yeah. Taylor Card's right.
So there's a lot to go into. Let's start with the title. And I'm going to thank our friends at Den of Geek for explaining it to me, because I'm a geek, but I don't have a den, and I didn't know this at all. So, an obel for Charon, not Charon, C-H-A-R-O-N, so Charon, I suppose. It references the Greek mythological god Charon and the specific way you bribe him. In order to get your soul taken to the right place in the underworld, you're supposed to give Charon an obel or payment. So, somebody was really proud of themselves with that title. I expected, when I saw what it was and I clicked on the episode, I'm like, all right, so these are some alien races or something. No. I had to do the heavy lifting. So that answers that question. Let's ask the big question, and we'll dive into the episode. We're going to start off talking about Saru. Frank, did you think he was going to die?
You know, I was really excited about the prospect of it.
What? Dude, yes. Really, he's our friend.
I know he's, Doug Jones is great, fantastic, but the fact...
Season one, he was one of the only characters I liked.
Yes, no, he's great. But what I liked about it is that, you know, these characters aren't somebody you've heard about before. I was like, would the show be daring enough to kill a beloved character like that, just like this?
So you thought it could have happened.
There's a part of me that, like, wanted it to happen just because of the... Wow, that was a very bold, dramatic move that they made for the show.
Frank Moran doesn't have a heart. Flobo, what did you think? Did you think that he was really going
to
die?
At first, I was saying no, but they stretched it out just enough to make you think maybe they might.
When there's, like, I don't know, 8 minutes left in the episode and, you know, Burnham's in there with him, I'm like, oh, man, they're doing this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, why are they going to kill, you know, one of the best interesting... I mean, most interesting, most unique characters that they've come up with for the show. I was disappointed because I really liked him and I thought that there was so much more to get to know about him. I should have known that they were just playing with us. They were really just messing with us. But
gotcha.
To Frank's point, it would be interesting if, you know, there are definitely... Well, I mean, this show, if you think about the fact that we lost Captain Georgiou in the second episode, that was a real shock. That was like, yeah, you don't really know what's coming. We haven't really had a lot of that, but, you know, it would have told us something, I think, that, you know, it would have been a very strong statement. We were just starting to get to know so much more about him in the course of this episode. Just sort of this notion that they're always in fear, being prepared to be slaughtered as part of this condition, and that, you know, if Burnham hadn't severed his ganglia, he would have just gone crazy because that's what's happened before. So we were getting so much about him, and it would have been a shame that it's like, all right, that's it. No more Kelpians, but I hope you liked him. So I thought that they were going to probably explore, you know, I mean, he referenced family, he referenced the people he left behind, he referenced why he couldn't go there. So I thought, like, okay, I guess we're going to get a whole planet of Kelpians that we're going to visit, and that'll be interesting. I don't know. I'm happy that he's there. Ultimately, Frank, are you glad we're going to see him again next week?
Where they've left him at is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I just don't know. It's just me just quibbling. But I felt like just that. It felt a little too much of a cliche where it's like, I'm going to do this. Oh, and then I pause. And that pause just protected it long enough for your body to do whatever it was going to need to do to move you past this. So, like, oh.
Okay. Right. If Burnham had no qualms and just gone right in there with the knife, then, you know, I don't think we would have seen this transformation. Flobo, what do you think about this idea that he's, you know, he just feels like he's more in control than he ever has been in his life?
I was a little hesitant. As much as I like the idea of not being tied to that visual device of having the ganglias flare up, I'm like, what goes next for the character now? Is he going to turn the opposite? Is he going to overcorrect and be this daredevil? Well, relatively speaking, is it going to be something?
Is he going to be a man without fear? Possibly.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's probably we're going to see. That's what I was thinking. I think we're going to see something along those lines. And, you know, the idea that, you know, what he mentions is that he promised Captain Georgiou that he wasn't going, you know, he wouldn't go back because of this not prime directive. General Order 1 sounds an awful lot like the Prime Directive, but it is not the Prime Directive because they don't call it that. I think the fact that he now is like, yeah, but my people's whole lives is a lie, I kind of have to tell them. So that'll be an interesting, you know, whenever we get to that, I think it'll be an interesting struggle for him. And he continues to be, you know, one of the most interesting characters because he's just so different than anything we've seen in, 770 episodes of Star Trek, you know? I'm really interested to see where they take him. And if you're watching in the chat, let us know. Let us know if you thought. And you're keeping an eye on the chat, right, Flobo?
Yes, I am.
So let us know if there are people that were like, nah, I knew they weren't going to kill him, which I don't know if I believe that. I think there had to at least be an inkling that, like, oh, they might be doing this.
Oh, yeah.
If it had been Network, I would
have like, you would have been like, there's no way.
Yeah. But I was thinking, oh, well, CBS All Access, you know, the same rules don't apply necessarily. Yeah. So you could make a bold move like this.
Yeah, they could have run out of money and they just had to start killing off cast members, you know.
And the most expensive one is the one you have to do the most makeup for.
Yeah.
So you gotta save some makeup
first.
Money.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, who knows who would have been next.
But Linus, anyway. See you later.
All the Klingons, actually. Klingons all would have been gone.
Oh, I'm so sad I missed last week's episode.
I know you didn't get to talk about it with us. That's right. Yeah.
Thumbs down. We'll move on.
A little quick review there.
that's all you needed. Yeah.
There you go.
So what are they saying in the chat, Flobo?
Yeah, I got to give a shout out to Stress Free K. I love to say this quote right here. Saru did look pretty buff with his shirt off, which I had to agree. He was working out.
Yeah.
You know?
I was uncomfortable for Burnham to have to be around that much manliness, you know?
Alexandra Sandu had a gift shout out saying that the levity that Michael Burnham had actually looked in her favor. She actually dug Michael's performance there, and one of the few times she was a fan of Michael Burnham, which was kind of a hot take, but...
No, yeah. I mean, look, she's usually... Look, she's not Vulcan, but she was raised on Vulcan. She usually keeps her emotions in check. So the fact that she was getting this upset just told you how strongly she felt. I just like the fact, Frank, tell me if you agree, that just the fondness they have for each other, the fact that she referred to them as friends, when you think about... Not just the first couple episodes of season one, but the bulk of season one, the nature of the relationship was not very close. It was just more like, well, we're going to have to work together and we're going to have to tolerate each other, but I do not like you.
But I almost thought if that was just such a course correction from how what seemed like a very close relationship in those first couple episodes, and then she makes what he perceives as this ultimate betrayal, not only against... Starfleet, but against everybody on the ship, leading to the death of Captain Georgiou. So I feel like maybe that pushes him in the direction. It's like, I've got to just course correct so far and really dislike you. But there was still that underlying friendship that had been kind of in tatters that through the course of the season they were able to kind of mend and bring back together.
Right. And did you – I don't know. Are you surprised to just think back, Flobo, on the way that the season started, just how close these two characters have became? Kind of without our really paying attention. It's all of a sudden like, oh, yeah, they're like besties.
Oh, yeah. Well, going back to season one, I mean, Saru was – again, in his most expressive way possible. I felt like he was the ultimate victim of betrayal. It was almost like there was no way, nothing you can do to come back from this. And to see it today and have him saying, you are literally family, quote, and that's so many words, was a complete arc in itself as far as that mending of that relationship, but also opens the door to see where that's going to go from here. And that we have Subaru 2.0 and Michael's becoming more and more in touch with her family. What does that mean going forward?
Yeah, because I look at everybody from first season. I feel like, you know, Burnham gets the most development, a little bit of Lorca, but Saru was pretty much the only other one that really got a couple episodes that kind of really, where Maury tried to be the captain and the other one who's on the planet.
Right. I mean, if you think back to season one, characters that a lot of character development was spent with are Lorca and Tyler, who we saw, you know, last week, but we're not going to see on a regular basis. So there's a lot of people left who still need to be serviced.
But if the show, the way it's been this season, where it's been a little bit more generous with focusing on some of the supporting cast, if we'd seen more of that in season one, then maybe like this episode where you see that as they talk about that connection, you buy more into it.
Yeah, I like sort of the strong bond amongst the Discovery crew that I think you would see in, you know, any sort of military or, you know, Starfleet setting, whatever. The fact that when they believe that he's going down to his quarters to die, everybody just sort of stands as a salute, and it just sort of starts happening gradually. I like that. But let's talk, Flobo, about his quarters. I would pay a lot to stay in a luxury hotel that was done up like that. I think, unless I'm mistaken, we hadn't seen that before.
Agreed.
And I thought it was cool. Like, I'm like, oh man, he's gonna die, and we're getting to see this cool room for the first time,
and not the last time. Well, yeah, it looked like. Well, you know what? You don't really know what Saru does when he's not an active. I thought that was pretty cool that
we
understood that he's out there being a peaceful person and being of mind and stuff like that, and being able to be killed, I guess, mercy killed in such a plush environment was definitely something I wasn't expecting. I was expecting something very minimalistic, very almost not even moved into, almost like Michael's room, but it was quite the opposite.
I guess it was Burnham talked about how he had just come from his homeworld with seeds and he managed to make it like that. So and Frank, we see this on a lot of shows, the person who is in extreme pain / very poor health, who powers through it for the good of the crew. Talk a little bit about what it says about Saru, the fact that, you know, every instinct in his body is to be afraid and run away, but he, you know, even when we thought he just had some really bad cold, there he was out there, you know. If he had dropped dead doing his job, he would have been, I think he would have been, you know, happy knowing he'd given it his all, right?
Well, true, because it's also empathy plays a big part in that as well, too. So whether, being empathetic and know that you know the rest of this crew needs help to do whatever it needs to do to survive, I feel like that also plays into it as well. And just to touch back on what the two of you were talking about with Saru going to die, I feel like that shot where he goes into the turbo lift and we go and we pan around as everybody kind of stands up and looks at him pays off a little bit more now that you've actually gotten a little bit of details of the bridge crew. It, you know, if it had been the end of last season where you really didn't know anything about this bridge crew, them standing up, you'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
But at least you've got little bit more.
It would be like, what was that? That was in Generations. Is there something wrong with your chair? Like, why is everyone standing up? So the other main focus of the episode is Lieutenant Tilly and Cadet Tilly. I always try to promote her.
Hey, like,
it's a matter of time.
Yeah, exactly.
Cadet Tilly and her fungi friend, May.
Or Fungi?
Fungi, yeah. I thought it was an interesting sort of device that we see, you know, somewhat recurrently in Star Trek, Frank, where a section of the ship does get closed off. And, you know, I mean, we see Burnham sort of awkwardly interact with them, you know, kind of like yelling like, oh my God, you guys solved your problem, I can go solve my problem, which we'll talk about in a moment. But I kind of want to focus on the Tilly aspect of it. I think that, you know, we're getting to really see a lot of her this season. I mean, I think she's probably somebody really connected with the fan base for the show. What did you think about the way that they handled, you know, her basically having a symbiote attached to her?
Yeah.
Why wasn't it Venom?
That's right.
Now that would have been something to watch.
Swerve.
Yeah.
I felt like watching last week's episode, the thing that frustrated me is that the way they lead that dialogue between Maya and Tilly, where she's clearly leading, like, you need to tell him things for me to statements. And she doesn't. Tilly just get it out of me. Let's do this. So I felt like that was frustrating. So it made this episode where they're trying to figure out how do we communicate with this. Like, well, we had a chance. Well, I don't know why nobody just last episode. We just didn't try to find out what this is. So I feel like I don't know if this is a storyline that I am enjoying them drawing out over multiple episodes.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it does begin to address the idea, Frank, that we posited early in the first season of why don't they use this spore technology in any of the future incarnations of the show? I think we're starting to see why, because, you know, it's a sentient indigenous beings, I guess, who they'll take it out on you, and they're not too happy about it. I think that's an interesting area to explore.
But when the fungi starts going starts talking about Stamets, I almost thought it was the Terran version of him, the Mirror Universe, because he was so abusive to that network that I thought that maybe they're not understanding the differentiation, because it doesn't feel like ours was that. I mean, he was trying to do it in the best way possible.
Yeah, but I think just by using it in general, and I mean, and that is a great point, because the Terran version that we saw, it was a lot more brutal. But I can see how the fungi would handle it. What did you think of that whole storyline?
You know, the storyline for me is becoming one of my favorites. The spore drive and the technology around it was kind of teetering towards magic. I felt like
pretty close.
It was
good.
So I was so glad they brought in back Jet Reno to be like, okay, what? That almost grounded a bit and say, hey, look, this thing is going on, but there's other ways to do it. There's better ways to do it. And how her dynamic with Stamets was like the both sides of the coin, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, I figured we would see Jet Reno again. And I kind of liked the debate, basically, of like, yeah, I just use good old fashioned dilithium. You know, it was almost like a modern day debate, Frank, on like clean coal. Like, no, I'm going to just use clean coal. You can go ahead and use your solar panels. And they mentioned solar panels and all that. I thought their back and forth between Stamets and Reno was actually very funny. And, you know, just sort of – especially like season one Stamets was – you know, he just had his run of that of the whole department. And there wasn't really anybody who challenged him. Mostly people were afraid of him, like Tilly, you know. And nobody really – gave it back to him like that. So I enjoyed that dynamic. I also thought it was funny when basically everybody was tripping on mushrooms in the scene. You know, literally that's what was happening. Yeah.
But I guess like the thing that frustrates me, and it goes back to my core issue with the show about where its time period is set.
Yeah.
That you go to spend a season, and it's probably going to be at least a half, if not another full second season, about why this jump drive does not exist as we know it in the rest of Trek history.
Yeah.
So you can create this really cool method of transportation, and then you immediately say, like, and here's why we can't ever use it. Whereas, like, if it was in the future, you could do a storyline where it's a whole new mode of transportation, and after seeing episodes of The Next Generation where they were saying warp drive is destroying the universe, another way of, like, hey, this is a way we can still travel the universe in a different method in a futuristic timeline of Trek may have been more interesting. But it's like, why are you setting this really cool new method just to cut it off?
Well, and this isn't really character based, but this is a little bit Easter eggy, and definitely doing a little bit more of that tidying things up for the fans. We talked a little bit about this last week, and you weren't here, Frank. That there was that dialogue that was inserted, like, and I hear the Klingons have hair again now that the war is over, because that was something that they had told us in interviews and things. But they're like, we got to put it in the show so that it's duly noted. Yes, Klingons have hair. But then we got some references to the fact that, like, yeah, Pike wants to go back to good old-fashioned view screens. So did you wonder why there were view screens on the Enterprise?
Yeah.
Because he didn't like the holograms because they looked like ghosts. And also a nice shout-out to C. Montgomery Scott, because they mentioned, you know, and sometimes these little winks to the audience are a bit much, but the idea that I don't think there'll ever be an engineer that loves the Enterprise this much. So nice little shout out to Scotty. I thought that was nice. But they keep doing these things, you know, where they're just like, yeah, yeah, we know stuff was messed up. We're gonna actually include it into the dialogue, which this goes back to if it was a network show and, you know, it had to be like, what, 42 minutes. You don't have time for this nonsense.
Yeah.
But because this week's show was 51 minutes, I think last week was 44. It's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, we'll just do some fan service and tidy things up.
But for like a ship that is supposed to be one of the premier ships of the fleet.
The Enterprise is the premier ship of the
fleet.
The fact
that it can't handle an interface.
Just can't handle it, bro.
That every other ship can. Like, well, I was like, come on, just so we can tie it in.
It's not their fault they're running it off of Windows 95. Okay. Right, so if they had a better operating system, it would be all right. Flobo, as somebody who is, you know, this, as we've talked about, this is your first entry into Star Trek. When they're doing things like this, do you feel like, Where are they getting so bogged down in these minor details, or does it?
It does seem like detours. I will admit, last week's detour about the Klingons growing hair was a lot more
obvious.
At least it was
brief. I hear they have hair.
But I mean, ultimately, I guess it didn't matter so much to me because since all these characters are new to me, I was like, well, maybe Pike is just a weird guy who just loves these screens.
You know well, to be fair, I think he is. I think he's a little bit of a weird guy.
It doesn't
guy.
Take me out as much.
Yeah, it doesn't take you out. Yeah, it's. I feel like if we had been watching it together, I just would have had to look at Frank and be like, okay, view screens, great.
Because if we're going to buy into this new, the way they're kind of the new look and tone of the ship that's taken place before the original series, then we may as well just say, all right, guys, you know what? The original series Enterprise did have these cool screens. You just face it now, just accept that they do now. And that's it.
Yeah. There was another fun device, no pun intended, that they used on the show, which in all the years of Star Trek I had never seen before, the Universal Translator on the Fritz. Mm-hmm. I thought that was fun. It made it difficult for me to take the notes as I watched the show like I usually do because I was like, I'm reading a lot. But I liked that it was in and out of Klingon and Spanish. And, you know, it was not essential to the story, but I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool that this thing that we take for granted when we watch this show. And look, a lot of science fiction uses devices like this, you know. Like, I mean, Doctor Who has essentially a universal translator. It's like, yeah, let's just not get bogged down in why everybody speaks English. And to have it break, I don't know, Flobo, I thought that was actually really cool.
Yeah, it's a device I had never seen before in Star Trek universe, but I thought it was pretty awesome. And the fact that kind of led Saru being the leader there, even though he was ill, being able to understand enough languages to fix the first iteration of the virus. So not only was that we found a threat that was kind of annoying, but not like catastrophic, but it gave Saru something to do to introduce his story as to why he's acting all wobbly.
I also liked that even in his condition, he had a moment of levity of, was I the only one who bothered to learn another language?
Right.
Yeah, you're the only one who bothered to learn 94 languages. Which I thought was interesting. And, you know, again, that in and of itself is just more of a byproduct of the overall adversary in the episode. But I still thought it was like it was a nice touch and it was interesting. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, although I was, and I guess maybe that's just maybe the human centric as well as English centric person, you know, just like, oh, everybody speaks English, of course.
Yeah, everybody speaks English.
But the fact that, it's like, oh, well, I thought everybody that communicated on the bridge or on the starship, if they've been to Starfleet Academy, they've been on Earth, they've all learned English, so there wouldn't be necessarily a need for the translator within the confines of the ship. It's more when you're dealing with species that you never have before. But I guess perhaps that is not as a strict thing, and the universal translator is used in Starfleet as well, at Starfleet Academy, so that you don't have to worry about learning that essential language if you don't want to.
Yeah, so I look in the chat here, Alexander Sandu. I absolutely love the translator malfunction. The scenario was both terrifying and hilarious.
Yeah, I have to agree, which you know, it's not usually the combination you get is terrifying and hilarious. But I do think that it worked really well. So let's talk about the spherical, you know, the nemesis, it's not a great word to use for Star Trek fans, nemesis, but it's an interesting idea. Frank, it's very reminiscent of Star Trek IV.
Yes.
Because it's, you know, it's a threat that's trying to talk to you, but you don't understand what it has to say. Now, you don't need to go get humpback whales to talk to it, but they do figure that out. And then when you do talk to it, it's like, yeah, look, we're just trying to share. We're just trying to talk. We don't really want to hurt you. So I do think those kind of threats are interesting when it's like you just completely misinterpret what its motives are. I thought that was interesting. But, as soon as Burnham figures it out, I'm like, oh, yeah, like Star Trek IV.
The first thing that I thought at first was Inner Light.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Where the idea of a dying culture wants to make sure that they're remembered by somebody.
Also true. Yeah, yeah. So you got both. Yeah, you got the 1-2 punch there of that. What did you think, Flobo, about this idea that it's actually wasn't attacking the ship per se? It did stop it because it's like, we need to pass this on so that we can survive. And I also thought it was a nice tie-in to what Saru was talking about, right, about his, the detailed logs that he had kept.
I was going to piggyback off that. I think this is the perfect threat this week to get both Saru's story and Tilly's story ahead about these cultures, about these societies that are in danger of being wiped out or eradicated or altered some way, and wanted to share their story, almost like a swan song type of deal.
Right.
Because I feel like it varies. Where do you want to know? Well, Inner Light, you're seeing Picard's exploration of this other culture,
right,
and living his life. And you know what the hook is for it, but it's still really cool. Or do you like the Star Trek IV approach, where it's just this mysterious probe? You really don't know, you don't really learn much about it by the end of the movie.
You're just like, okay, the whales are going to talk to the probe, everything's going to be fine. Yeah, and then we're gonna meet Cybok in the next movie.
That's right. I feel like Inner Light more my cup of tea for a story like this.
Yes, for a story like this. Yeah. So this season so far, the primary focus had really been on Spock, which was a bit of an afterthought, I think, in this one. And Flobo and I talked a little bit about this last week. I'm starting to lose my patience on the Spock thing. You can't drag this out forever.
I would have if, because we only have 6 minutes or we lose his warp trail signature, right, forever.
Yeah.
I'm so glad at the end, like Burnham says, oh no, we're able to get one last reading.
Yeah.
So we can continue on. Because if they truly lost it, we're back to square one, I would have been really irritated.
I'm done.
Yeah. I mean, there's a movie called The Search for Spock, and he was nowhere near as hard to find as he is on this show. And so I think that it gave us the opportunity to meet Number One, which I thought was cool, because it's not a character that we know very well outside of the cage, but she's such a noticeable part of that. She stands out so much. So I thought it was cool that she came to visit, but then it's like, all right, back to space dock with
Take
you.
Take your fries with
yeah.
you.
I'm gonna go out on some adventures. You finish that burger. See you around, I guess, when the ship gets fixed. Were you excited to see Number One, Frank, or do you feel like they didn't really service the character well?
I felt both.
Yeah. That's where I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Glad to see her and just wish she had more to do. And if this is an example of the amount of stuff we'll see, the amount of screen time she'll get through the course of the season, I will be disappointed. I don't need her to bounce in every couple episodes with a quick little update and then that's it.
No, it would be good even if it's like at the end of the season, if they just have one episode where she's actually, heavily a part of it. Obviously a character that you're not familiar with, sure, Flobo, but did you feel like we really got to know her?
To me it was just a little reminder of how structured it seems it is an Enterprise. Like, it's like a whole different vibe than the Discovery crew. And I was like, oh yeah, the different uniforms and the way they carry themselves and the fact she went right to the holodeck and her food. You know what I mean? So to me it was kind of like, okay, yeah, there is that other ship out there with a different, not set of rules, but a different aesthetic.
Yeah.
But to go back for the Spock thing, right when the sphere explodes, and I know they're all dealing with Saru's impending death, but wouldn't, as the captain, just also keep the bigger picture? Like, follow Spock right now, set a course, and as we're racing to follow him, we can deal with Saru and everything that's happening. I was like, why is nobody saying immediately, this is such a critical thing, boom, go, follow that warp trail. Nothing happens. We're all just going to sit here for a little bit and watch Saru get up, walk to the turbo lift. I'm like, nobody's doing this?
No.
All right.
Yeah.
You know, I just imagine you like throwing the TV screen. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
No, last week I was at the point of like, oh, they got to give us Spock soon. Now I'm like, it's going to be like five more episodes. They're gonna really drag this out, you know? And I don't know. I casually was just having a conversation about the show with a friend, and you know, his contention was that they can't do this forever. Like they have to stop promising us Spock.
Right.
I'm sorry. I just coined a phrase. Stop Spock teasing us. I don't feel good about
family
that.
Podcast.
I really
sir.
Don't feel good I don't about know what, it. But at the same time, I had to say it. As penance, I'm now going to listen to a very important message.
Oh, really?
From Frank Moran.
That's right. Yes, everybody, listen to me now. Hey guys, before we move on to our next topic, we just wanted to say thank you for making us the ESPN or TV Talk. But for us to continue to grow, we actually need your help. So if you're on YouTube right now, just hit that thumbs up button and subscribe. And if you're on iTunes, give us that 5-star rating. But no matter where you are, leave us a comment so you can get involved in the conversation. Let Christian know how you feel about Spock teasing.
That's right.
That's right.
Let us all know how you feel, yeah.
Being part of AfterBuzz TV has meant so much to all of us, and we truly appreciate you supporting us and doing what we love. So don't forget to tell your friends and keep enjoying our shows.
Yeah.
We also get another character from Enterprise, Non, like the bread, I guess is her name. She was in the season 2 premiere, and she had the this goes back to Den of Geek. So she's a member of the Barzon species, first seen in the Next Generation episode The Price. And the breathing device she wears allows her to process Earth-like air that is normally toxic to her people. But most importantly, she rocks the miniskirt-style uniform from the original series. So that's really what it comes down to.
I don't remember seeing the bottom half of her at all. I saw her like a 2C.
The interesting thing about that, I thought, was like, well, if she's going to be there, why don't we have number one?
Yeah, because
like Romijn that expensive that you're like, no, she's going to be in one scene and that's it.
I really thought one of them was going to be expendable this episode. I was waiting for that to happen. I was saying the same thing too. I was like, oh, that seems very similar.
Yeah, like, why do they bring her in and then like, all right, see you later, but she's going to get to hang out.
Yeah,
with zero justification as to why her. Like,
yeah,
oh, she's from the Enterprise. Like, and why is she here?
Yeah, and number one's from the Enterprise.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I mean, I guess she has really important work to do, not flying through space. So I don't know. It's that was frustrating. Let's put it that way. And I almost would rather not have seen number one this week, I think, because if we're to say we only get, you know, what you're talking about, Frank, just a couple of like visits like this throughout the season. One, why do you cast Rebecca Romijn?
Yeah.
Two, why have her on at all if she's not really going to do anything? I do suspect she's going to do something. Mm-hmm. I'm at least hoping.
I would agree with you on that because it's a waste of time and resources on a character that that fans clearly love as part of Trek lore and would welcome a chance to see more explored.
Right. Exactly. So I guess we will have to see how that goes in the weeks ahead. Let's see. We talked about the conversation about dilithium mining, which I thought was fun, and there were some references to the short treks that were the little mini episodes that filled in between season 1 and 2, including the Brightest Star, which was the Saru episode. So that actually, if you haven't watched those, this is a nice reminder. Before next week, they're all out there. They're all on CBS All Access. You know, Flobo, you wouldn't have been able to watch them on Netflix. That's probably the difference. That's why you didn't see them. But so what do you think about this idea? I'll ask you first, Frank. This idea that the first contact with this sphere was we're going to infect you with a virus. It's interesting. It's a very violent first contact, but not so much intended that way. What do you think about sort of the bigger question that it poses of, you know, what we were talking about earlier, that it's this threat that's, I guess, technically not really a threat.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's one of those changing your perspective. And understandably, space is a hostile place. And yes, you, more often than not, I mean, even though you're on a scientific mission and you're out there to explore new worlds and new civilizations to boldly go, you still run into a lot of resistance. So I feel like your natural tendency is just in the face of the unknown or the not understood, you will take a defensive posture. But, you know, sometimes it's just like, you know, like, you gotta let your heart heart be your guide.
That's like going down to, like, New York, like, hey, I'm walking in. Like, just the way he just naturally aggressive.
Right. And it's like, you know, we're walking here.
For sure. I agree. I really thought it was going to be a Red Angel story beat. The fact that it was a red cloud and it was affected by the virus. But I thought that was a good setup to say, no, swerve. We're coming in peace in the most aggressive way on the planet possible.
Yeah.
I feel like with saying it's been around for hundreds of thousands of years and it has this rich database, there's got to be something that they're going to mine out of there eventually that's going to tie into the Red Angels.
Yeah. And I mean, that's also
multiple?
Or Red Angels.
Red Angel. Oh. Every time they talk about it and when we've seen it, they're not making me care about the Red Angel.
No.
I'm just like, I guess it means a lot to Burnham because she saw it when she saw it. But I'm just like, can we just move on? It seems like a flimsy tie into Spock and why he's, you know, allegedly wanted for murder for three people and the Red Angel. And I'm like, well, they're going to have to make it make sense. But I just don't care. They're not making me care about it. Flobo, do you care about the Red Angel? It's fine if you do, by the way. Don't.
No, for sure. I want to. I really do.
It's, right.
It seems like it's the A story or A with a bullet. But there's nothing there about it that's like, oh, he's drawn it once and we've seen it in visions once. And to be honest with you, I've gone down this whole like fungi/fungi thing. Like, I feel like as far as entertainment value, it's not as high there. But if it's the A story, I'm trying to be patient to see how it's going to play off.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if that's the mix of the way they're trying to tell more of this serialized storytelling, where a Red Angel episode could have been like a two-parter, where you kind of set everything all up. But now that you're sprinkling it in over multiple episodes, it almost gets a little frustrating because it doesn't feel like you're really advancing the story that much.
Yeah.
And I feel the way I do about the Red Angel with regards to this ongoing Spore storyline, which we see at the end of the episode. Seems like everything's all right. Tilly gets sucked right back into it, and if you saw the preview for next week, it's going to deal very heavily with that. And all I can hope is, like, can that be the last part of this story, please? Because I don't need any more. If it means shutting down the Spore Drive forever, go ahead and do that. Just let's not have any more of annoying May talking to her. I know we have her next week because I saw it in the thing. But I don't know. Personally, I'm ready for that story to be over and kind of ready for just to focus on Spock. You know, where are you at with this, Flobo?
Yeah, I think May has the perfect tone for me to be like, okay, you can't make this happen forever, especially when she is visualized as a human. But yeah, I want to see where Spock's going to go to. You played it. It reminds you of another show. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to mention other shows, but like the first season of Supergirl.
Oh, my God. What are you talking about? I'm just saying.
I'm sorry. I'm a hot take. The whole premise was always, your cousin will love this. Your cousin was texting you. Your cousin's this. Your cousin's that. And it was like, oh, my gosh. I want to know what he's doing. Wait a minute. That's the whole point of the show.
Why don't we have Superman on the show? Right. And I know they actually brought Superman onto the show.
So I'm watching this going like, I know Spock's important to the lore, and I know there's a connection there, however weird it may be.
Yeah.
But you have to get to it. Because I'm about to be like, I don't know. I don't really care about Spock as someone in the Discovery universe.
Yeah.
And that hasn't been sold to me.
And when we get to the topic of Spock in the course of the episode, originally Burnham's like, yeah, I gotta recuse myself from anything to do with my brother. And then, you know, sort of this dying wish that Saru is like, promise me you'll patch up your relationship with a guy I don't know or care about. I'm not dead, but remember that dying wish. Stick to it. So, I, you know, I guess she just came to the place where she realizes it's important. When she said she was going to not want to interact with Spock, I don't know about you, Frank, but I was like, yeah, I'm not buying that.
Well, the longer that they go with constantly, well, what happened between the two of you? Long dramatic pause, some sort of interruption.
Yeah.
That they, you know, prolong telling us what Berman did to Spock that was so terrible that she thinks that they can't come back from this.
What if it's something like he had built a really tall Jenga tower and she just came over and pulled out the bottom? Yeah, like, what if it's that?
Yeah, because you're really, by this point, I feel like there's nothing that the production can make me do that's going to make me like, wow, that truly was devastating. It is going to be the actors going to have to really sell those scenes. Yeah. To make me go
so
like,
are you ready, Ethan Peck? Are you ready to sell that to us? And finally, when you're dealing with the future and you decide to deal with music, we talked about it briefly at the top of the show. This series, there was the episode in season one that dealt with the loop where we kept hearing Staying Alive by the Bee Gees, and then we're getting David Bowie lyrics. I think it was a nice moment between Stamets and Tilly. But it's always the reminder of, like, aren't these songs, like, 150 or 200 years old at this point? Right. Like, and they know them. They both know the same David Bowie song. I get it. You know, he's Ziggy Stardust out in the space and everything. But come on. It's like, just make up a song. That would have been fun, too.
Like Reno, too. Like, oh, having that hallucination, I thought I was with Prince, and I was wearing a brace. Like,
that's why I was drumming for Prince. Yeah,
what?
So we had two, right? I'm glad you reminded me that, because I had that in my notes, but that was the other thing. It's like, okay, so we get David Bowie and Prince. There's nobody else. Just make somebody up.
Well,
you know?
I mean, you got to have the right song, though. You can't be like, what's your favorite song? And she's like, Uptown Funk.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of weird, you know?
Right.
As you can stab him.
Also, which
brain.
Prince song was she drumming during? You know?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 1999.
Yeah.
Feel that has to be what it was. But anyway. And look, that's such a minor thing. And I'm putting it at the final moment for that reason.
But it just makes sense. It's like, how many of us listen to music from the 1920s as a regular go-to? It's a small cross-section of people that are like, you know, like, yes, I'm a huge fan of that. And to think like,
I mean, look, I've been known to dance the Jitterbug, you know? Yes, the Charleston, you know? Because why not? No, it's an excellent point. And it takes me out of it. It's like, this is Star Trek, you know, like they have like their own music, you know, and the J.J. Abrams verse using Beastie Boys songs and stuff. And I'm like, okay, so, you know, Kirk played it when he was a kid, but that's still like 100, 200 years or whatever after the fact.
Yeah.
Actually, at that point, it's even longer. It's like almost 300. So it's like, so there's no music after this point. There's no music from like 21 or 2100 or even 2050. You know, there's nothing.
Yeah.
And nobody likes Run DMC in the future. What's going on?
I know.
Anyway,
I'm the king of rock.
Right? Yeah. I mean, they'd have to look up like what are Adidas? That doesn't even make sense.
Right.
It's Kentucky Fried Chicken. I don't understand any of these things. Am I illing? I don't know. Anyway, that's all the time we have here. You answer those questions. Why doesn't anybody at Star Trek like Run DMC? And you can tell us next week. Until then, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. Flobo, where do people find you?
You can find me online at flobito.com. That's FLOBITO.com.
And Frank?
Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. And real quick, folks, in the comments section, check out the Mary Sue. They just did a write-up a couple days ago about Let's Judge the Star Trek Captain's Quarters. They did little mock-ups of every Star Trek captain's quarters, living quarters on the starships. Which Star Trek captain would you want to have the quarters of?
Surreal.
Sisko. I don't know. I'm just guessing. We'll have to, you know, maybe we'll take a look at that for next week. We will be back next Thursday at 10 Pacific. Until then, live long and prosper.
DS9 reference?
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.